my hand in her hair and pull her mouth to mine. I take her mouth slowly, claiming every bit of her tongue, her lips. She's mine in this moment, and we're both taking full advantage of it. Quickly she grows eager, aggressive in her movements, and shoves me to the floor and climbs onto my torso. The look on her face is one of deep relief as she slips her tongue back inside my mouth. I groan, lifting my hips to meet hers. I'm hard for her. I want her to feel it. Her fingers lace through mine, and she guides them between her legs. She's excited to show me how wet she is. She's ready to confess her need for me. I'm ready too, and I show her when I grind my hips up into her. She curses, begging me to take this to the next level. Can we?
What if we get caught?
She asks, pulling back only a fraction. I don't know if I care as much as I always thought I would.
What if we don't?
She then says to herself, and silences any further questions either of us may have with her tongue between my lips and her hands unbuttoning my trousers. Her hand slips inside, gripping me, and I melt into her. My fears of being caught by an angry Ken, my knowledge that she is not mine for the taking, the anxiety I'm filled with when I think of leaving here, all of it melts. The only thing I can think of is being buried in her, needing every part of her. I tug at my trousers, pulling them down along with my boxers. Her mouth is tasting me, tongue probing, licking the swollen vein down my center. She closes her eyes, relishing the way her wet mouth takes me all the way into her throat, then back up. She's becoming less cautious as she devours me, quickly yet efficiently. She's pleasing me as if she won't ever taste me again. It's true that she won't. Lie down, facing up, legs spread wide. I want to look at you, I tell her. I have to look at her while I finally have what I want beneath me. Trish moves toward the center of the carpet, dragging the dark cherry coffee table to one side. She quickly undresses, and I don't mind, because watching her is something else. Her long cotton dress is falling to her feet, and her arms are already lifting the straps of her simple white bra. My eyes follow the curve of her body. Her nipples are tight little pebbles as my gaze passes them. Her stomach is tight. The muscles on her torso curve down to her hip bones. I'm throbbing and heavy in my hand when I reach her. She's lying down on the carpet, her legs spread wide for me. My cock hangs heavy between us, and I can smell the wetness of her pussy. I swear I can feel how tight she'll be. I inch closer, pushing against her until I slowly fill her. She feels like a damn glove as I thrust in and out of her. I don't think I can stop this, ever. I already need more of her. Trish's eyes have rolled up into her head, and I know I'm not going to be able to hold on much longer. I rock my hips, and she wraps her thighs around my waist. She's coming, she says.
So hard,
she whimpers, clawing into my arms as I fuck harder. I spill into her, wishing this wasn't the first and only time I'll be able to enjoy her body in this way. She's breathing hard into my shoulder, and I'm kissing the wet marks on her neck from my previous licks. Minutes later, we've returned to reality with a crash of sore arms and legs, of sweat and exhausted breaths. Trish is sitting on the floor, legs crossed, and I'm on the couch, keeping as much distance between us as possible.
What if we can't stop?
She says, looking at me, then toward the kitchen table. I'm not sure what to do. Not sure what I want, what she wants. Not sure what's possible. We have to, I say dumbly. I'm leaving next month. Even though she's heard me say this, even though she helped me book my flight, she turns her head to me suddenly, looking as if she's hearing the news for the first time. Then, without a word, she nods her head, both of us feeling a storm of guilt and relief and loss for something we truly never had. The Wondrous Present. Ken was my friend, my closest friend, I would say, and I was obsessively mad about his wife. I loved the crazy woman and the fire that burned along with her presence. She was challenging and brilliant, my weakness. It was unacceptable what we were doing, and she knew that. She knew it, but neither of us could help it. We were stuck, victims of bad timing and worse choices. It wasn't our fault, I would convince myself each time I collapsed, spent and panting, onto her naked body. We simply couldn't help it. It wasn't our fault. It was the universe. It was the circumstances of our situation. I was raised that way. I was taught as a young boy that nothing was my fault. My dad was always right, even when he wasn't. And he taught his eldest son to think the same way. I was a spoiled child, but not by money. During the times I got to spend with my father, I was taught his arrogance. My father never owned up to any of his mistakes. He never had to. I learned that in life there was always someone else to blame. I tried to be a different father than he was, a better one. Kimberly says I'm doing a great job at that. She praises me much more than I deserve, but I'll take it. She can dish it out, too. Her mouth is worse than my university mates, after a 12-pack of cheap piss-water beer.
Put Karina to bed, and I'll be waiting for you.
Kimberly kisses me on the cheek and gently slaps my bum, winking and grinning as she prances into our bedroom. I love that woman. Karina makes a little burping sound in her sleep, and I gently rub at her back. One of her tiny hands rises up and grasps mine. I still can't believe I'm a dad again. I'm old now. Patches of gray hair keep popping up here and there. After Rose passed and it was just Smith and me, I never expected to have another child, or to discover that I had already had another child. Still less than that, particularly given the way things started. I never expected to have a 21-year-old son in my life as a friend and man. Arden went from being my biggest regret to my greatest joy. I used to fear for his future, so much so that I hired him advance just to make sure he had a job. What I didn't expect was for him to turn out to be a goddamn genius. He was struggling so hard during his teens that I thought he was going to ruin or end his life before it really ever began. He was so pissed off all the time, and the little shit that he was gave his poor mom hell. I watched Harden go from being a troubled and lonely young boy to a best-selling author and advocate for troubled youth. He's become everything I could have dreamed for him to be. Smith looks up to Harden in every way, with the glaring exception of his tattoos, which they both love to argue over. Smith finds them tacky, and Harden loves to show Smith each new tattoo he manages to somehow squeeze onto his already covered skin. I look down at the sleeping beauty in her crib and switch on the nightlight on the dresser while I silently promise this sweet, precious girl that I'll be the best father I can possibly be.
Smith.
As a young man, he didn't know how to be a role model. He had absolutely no fucking idea why anyone would want to be like him. But the little boy did. The little dimpled boy followed him around every time he visited. And as the boy grew, so did he. The boy would end up being one of his closest friends. And by the time the boy was as tall as him, he was truly his brother.
Harden is coming over again today. And I'm more excited than usual because he hasn't been here in a few months. I thought maybe he wasn't going to come back. When he moved, he promised he would make sure to visit every once in a while. As much as he could, he said. I like that he's kept his promise so far. These past few days, my dad keeps making me do stuff to distract me. Things like my math homework, unloading the dishwasher, and taking Kim's dog out to pee. I like taking the dog, Teddy. He's nice and really small, so I can carry him when he gets too lazy to walk. but still, I'm really distracted that Hardin's coming. Today was long. School, piano lessons, and now homework time. Kimberly is singing in the other room. Man, she's so loud. Sometimes I think she thinks she sounds good, so I won't tell her that she doesn't. Her high-pitched notes sometimes scare her little dog. Each time Hardin comes to my house, he brings me a book. I always read them. And then we talk or text a little about them later. Sometimes he gives me hard books that have language I can't understand, or books that my dad takes away because he thinks I'm too young to read them. With those, he always swats Hardin on the head with the book before putting it away for me for someday. I think it's funny when Hardin cusses at my dad, which usually accompanies those thumps to the head. Tessa told me once that Hardin used to teach me curse words when I was younger, but I don't remember that. Tessa always tells me things about when I was younger. She talks more than anyone else, except Kim. No one talks as much or as loudly as Kim. Tessa is pretty close, though. As I pass the front door, the alarm system beeps a few times, and I look over to see a small screen pop up on the living room TV. Hardin's face, with his big nose, covers the little box screen. His neck is there now, his tattoos making it look like he scribbled on the screen. I laugh and press the speaker button. "Did your dad change the code again?" Hardin asks, which is funny because his lips move faster on the screen than his voice goes through the speaker. His voice is the same as my dad's almost, but slower. My grandma and grandpa talk like them too, because they all were born in England. My dad says I've been there 4 times, but the only time I remember is last year when we went to his friend's wedding. My dad got hurt on that trip. I remember his leg looked like cow meat that someone ground up to cook and eat. It reminded me of The Walking Dead. But don't tell him I found a way to see some episodes. I helped Kim change his bandages, and they were so gross, but they left some cool scars. Kim had to push him around in a wheelchair for a month. She said she did it because she loves him. If I was ever hurt and needed to be wheeled around, I'm sure she would push me too. I buzz Hardin in and walk to the kitchen as I hear his shoes stomping through the living room.
"Smith, honey," Kim says when she comes into the kitchen. "Do you want something to eat?"
Today, her hair is curled up around her face. She kind of looks like her dog, Teddy, whose hair is everywhere. I shake my head and Hardin joins us.
"I do," Hardin says. "I'm hungry."
"I didn't ask you, I asked Smith," she says, and wipes her hands on her blue dress. Hardin laughs, a loud noise. Shaking his head, he looks at me.
"Do you see how she treats me? It's terrible."
I laugh too. Kim says Hardin picks on her. They're both too funny. Kim opens the fridge and takes out a pitcher of juice.
"You're one to talk."
Hardin laughs again and sits down on the chair next to me. In his hands are 2 small packages wrapped in white paper. No bows, no writing on the outside. I know they're mine, but I don't want to be impolite. I stare at them and try to read the title of the books through the paper, but it's no use. I turn to the window and pretend to be looking outside so I don't seem too rude. Hardin sets the packages down on the counter and Kim hands me a cup of juice, then goes to the cabinet for some chips. My dad always tells Kim not to let me eat a lot of them, but she doesn't listen. My dad says she never does. I grab for the bag, but Hardin swipes it and holds it over my head for a minute. He smiles down at me.
"Thought you weren't hungry."
The hole under his lip looks like someone drew a dot on his face. He used to have a piercing, I remember. I always tell him to put it back. He tells me to stop listening to Tessa.
"I am now."
I jump up and grab the bag back from him, and it makes a loud crinkling sound in my hands. Hardin shrugs, and he looks happy. He thinks I'm funny. He tells me all the time. Once I've unclipped the bag, he takes a handful of chips and shoves them into his big mouth.
"Are you gonna open your gifts before you shove your face full of crisps?"
Crumbs of food fly out while he talks, and Kim makes a grossed-out face.
"Christian!"
she yells for my dad. I laugh, and Hardin pretends to be scared. I scoot the bag of chips away. "Well, since you asked, I want to open the books first." Hardin picks up both packages and holds them to his chest.
"Books, huh? What makes you think I brought you books?"
Because you always do. I reach for the thickest one, and he slides it across the counter. Touché, he says, whatever that means. Forgetting my manners a little bit, I tear at the paper until a colorful cover is revealed. It shows a boy with a wizard hat. The Chamber of Secrets. I read the title out loud. I'm happy about this book. I just finished the one before it. When I look up at Harden, he pushes his hair away from his face. I agree with my dad. He should get a haircut. His hair is as long as Kim's now. He points to the book. It's from Landon again. He likes that tiny wizard. My dad comes into the kitchen and cusses at Harden. Harden slaps him on the shoulder, and Kim calls them children. I act more like a grown-up than they do, she says. Well, that's nice of him, my dad says. Smith, make sure you say thank you to Tess's friend. Harden scoffs. Tess's friend is my brother. He smiles and scratches the tattoos on his arms. I want tattoos like him when I'm older. My dad says no, but Kim told me that once I'm out of the house, he really can't stop me. I can get whatever I want when I'm a grown-up. He's not your real brother, I tell him. My dad explained that Landon isn't his real brother. Harden's smile goes away, and he nods. Sure, but he's my brother still. While I ponder what he means by this, Kim asks my dad if he's hungry, and Harden looks around the kitchen. He seems a little sad for some reason all of a sudden. Your dad is my dad. So is Landon's mom your mom? I ask. Harden shakes his head no, and my dad kisses Kim on her shoulder, which, of course, makes her smile. He always seems to make her smile. Sometimes people can be family without sharing parents. Harden stares at my face like I'm supposed to say something back. Really, I don't know what he means, but if he wants Landon to be his brother too, that's okay with me. Landon is really nice. He lives in New York, so I don't see him very much. Tessa is out there, too. My dad has an office there. It's shiny and smells like a hospital. Harden touches my hand, and I look at him. Just because Landon is my brother doesn't mean you aren't, too. You know that, don't you? I'm embarrassed a little because Kim is making a face like she's going to cry, and my dad looks scared. I know, I tell him, and look at the Harry Potter book. Landon can be my brother, too. Harden looks happy when he smiles, and I look up to see Kim is making that face again. Yeah, he sure can. He looks at Kim and says, Stop it already, lady. You would think someone died with the way she's acting. My dad calls Harden a bad name, and Kim jumps out of the way when Harden throws an apple at his chest. He looks like a baseball player the way he snags it out of the air and takes a bite, which makes us all laugh. Harden slides the other book across the counter, and I grab it. The paper is harder to tear on this one, and I get a small cut from one of the corners. I wince a little, but hope nobody else notices. If I tell anyone, Kim will make me wash it right now and put a bandage on, but I really just want to see what this one is. As the last piece is torn away, I see a big cross on the cover of the book. Dracula? I sound out the word. I've heard of this before. It's a vampire book. My dad moves away from Kim and walks around the counter. Dracula, you've got to be kidding me. He's not even 10. He holds his hand out for the book. I look at Kim for help. She pushes her lips together and gives Harden a mean look. Usually I take your side, she says. Harden calls her a liar, but she keeps talking. But Dracula? Out of all things, Harry Potter and Dracula, what a mix. My dad nods and stands still like he's some big statue, the way he always does when he wants to show he's right. After a moment, Harden rolls his eyes and tugs at the collar of his black t-shirt. Sorry, man, your dad's being a tool. You can read the chamber book now, and when I come next time, I'll bring you another. One with no violence, my dad interrupts. Harden sighs. Sure, no violence, he says in a funny voice. I laugh again. My dad smiles and Kim is hugging him. I wonder how long it will be until I see Harden again. When will you be back?
I ask. Hardin scratches his chin.
I'm not sure. A month, maybe?
A month feels really long, but I suppose the Harry Potter book is pretty long.
Hardin leans a little closer to me. I will come back, though, and bring a book every time, he whispers.
Like my dad did for you? I ask him, and his eyes look at my dad. Our dad.
Hardin doesn't call him Dad, though. He calls him Vance, which is our last name. Not Hardin's, his is Scott. He got it from his fake dad. When I tried to call my dad Vance, he told me I would be grounded until I turned 30 if I said it again. I don't want to be grounded that long, so I call him Dad.
Hardin shifts his body in the chair.
Yeah, like he did for me.
He seems sad again, but I can't tell for sure. Hardin is sad, then mad, then laughing all the time. He's really weird.
How did you know about that, Smith? My dad asks.
Hardin's face turns red and he mouths, "Don't tell him." I lift my hands up and reach for more chips. Hardin says not to tell. Hardin slaps his forehead, then mine, and Kim smiles at us both. She smiles so much all the time. I like when she laughs, too. It sounds nice.
My dad walks closer to us.
Well, Hardin doesn't make the rules, remember?
My dad puts his hands on my shoulders and rubs. Feels good when he does that.
Tell me what Hardin said, and I'll take you for ice cream and buy you a new track for your train.
My train is my favorite toy. My dad always buys me new tracks to add, and last month, Kim helped me move the whole thing to an empty room, so now I have a whole room just for my trains.
Hardin looks like he's sweating, but he doesn't look mad, so I decide I can tell my dad. Plus, there's the new train stuff I'll get.
He said you brought him books like this.
I hold up the heavy books, and that it made him happy when he was a little boy like me.
Hardin turns his head, and my dad looks surprised by what I said. His eyes are shiny now, and he's staring at me.
Did he now?
My dad's voice is weird.
Yeah, he did, I say, nodding.
Hardin stays quiet, but he looks back at me. His face is red, and his eyes are shiny like my dad's. I look at Kim, and she has her hand over her mouth.
Did I say something bad? I ask them.
My dad and Hardin say, no, no, at the same time.
You didn't say anything wrong, little man.
My dad puts one of his hands on my back and one on Hardin's. Usually when he tries this, Hardin moves away. Today, he doesn't.
Hessa. New York is having one of its hottest summers when Tessa has Auden. It's Tuesday, release day for my newest novel, and Tessa and I are lying on the carpet, staring up at the ceiling fan we installed just last week. We keep redecorating our small apartment for some insane reason. We know we won't end up staying here, yet we keep putting money into this place. Our very impulsive decision to completely redo our son's nursery when he was only 8 weeks old has ended up being much more of a task than we expected. The renovation has Auden's crib in our room, centered at the end of our bed. I find it stuffy and cramped, like we're refugees in a tiny boat. Ones who decided to give their 5-year-old, our daughter, Emery, the main cabin, while we took the escape raft. Tess loves it. Some nights she falls asleep with her feet facing the headboard and holds his hand while they both sleep. Half of the time I wake her to write her position by nibbling at her ear, rubbing her tense shoulders. The other half, I wrap my arms around her legs and just sleep that way. I have to touch her in some way. She always ends up next to me by the morning, nibbling on my ear or rubbing my lower back. I already feel like an old man. My back aches from my shitty excuse for a writing posture, sitting slouched on the couch or cross-legged on the floor with my laptop on my actual lap. Tessa points up to the fan.
It's crooked. We should repaint.
Currently, the nursery is painted a soft Easter yellow to go along with a gender-neutral room. We wanted to keep the space light, having learned firsthand what a mistake, and subsequent pain, it was to assume one's daughter wanted cotton candy pink walls. Those we painted before she was born. But as soon as Emery learned that she didn't really like pink, it took us 3 afternoons and 3 coats of green to cover that damn color. We learned our lesson from that, and Tessa learned a few new swear words from me. So, insisting that a muted pastel yellow was all the rage, we went with that. We all know how I just have to keep up with the Joneses and please my lady. That, or the fact that it'll be a really easy color to paint over when Auden starts expressing preferences. The nursery contains several different shades of yellow. I didn't realize there were shades of yellow, or that they could clash so much. Each has come from Tessa's stops at IKEA and Pottery Barn, which I swear occur at least 3 times a week. She finds all sorts of things she loves and hugs them close to her chest, exclaiming things like, "This decorative pillow will look so good," and "This toy is so cute I could eat it up." And then she tucks said item under a sofa cushion or into a random cubbyhole in the nursery that she hadn't filled yet. The room has ended up being a big ball of undulating sunshine that Tessa can't be in for longer than 10 minutes without getting nauseous. She made me promise her that I would never again let her decorate a room, especially not a nursery. And now she wants me to repaint it all again. The things I do for this woman. And I'd do more. I do all I can. One thing I could do for her is, by some magical means, make it so she can leave more of her work at her office. She's been so tired lately, and it's driving me fucking mad. She won't slow down, but I know how much she loves her job. Her career is her third baby. She works so incredibly hard to produce the most beautiful weddings imaginable. She's new, brand new in the industry, but she's fucking amazing at this. Tessa was terrified when she'd brought up her potential career change with me. She was pacing back and forth in our small kitchen. I had just loaded the dishwasher and finished painting Emery's nails. I thought I was doing fine with the role reversal, but Emery made Tess fire me when I claimed that the mess I was making on her tiny hands was okay, that the red polish just looked like she had killed something. I hadn't realized any child of mine could have such a weak stomach and sour sense of humor.
"So, I want to turn down the promotion advance and go back to school," Tessa said casually from the kitchen table.
Or what I took as casually. Emery sat quietly, having no idea of the impact such adult choices have on people's lives.
"Really?"
I rubbed a towel over a wet plate to dry it. Tessa tucked her bottom lip between her teeth, and her eyes went wide.
"I've been thinking about it so much lately, and if I don't do it, I'll go insane."
She didn't have to explain that to me. Everyone needs a change sometimes. Even I got bored between books, and Tessa came up with the idea of me substitute teaching 2 or 3 days a month at Valzar, Emery's elementary school, where Landon happens to work. Granted, I quit after 3 days, but it was an entertaining experiment and earned me brownie points with my girl. As always, I encouraged Tessa to do what she wanted. I wanted her to be happy, and it's not like we needed the money. I'd just signed my next contract with Vance, my third in the last 2 years. The money from after went straight into an account for the kids. Well, after I bought Tessa a "please forgive me for being a fucking idiot repeatedly" gift. It was simple, a charm bracelet made of metal to replace her old one, which was made of yarn. Over the years, the yarn tore apart, but Tessa kept the charms, and she was overly excited that the new bracelet had the option of adding, changing the charms as often as you like. It seems like a pretty stupid concept to me, but she loved it. The next morning, Tessa sat down with Vance and politely declined the promotion, then cried for an hour when she got home. I knew she would feel guilty for leaving her job, but she won't be upset long. I knew Kim and Vance would reassure her every day until her 2 weeks' notice was over. When she got her first wedding planning client, she squealed, and I watched her come alive in a way I hadn't seen before. I still didn't know why this insane woman stayed with me after all the stupid shit I did when I was young, but I was pretty fucking happy that she did, if only to see her as excited as she now was. Of course, Tessa nailed that first wedding and got recommendation after recommendation, enabling her to hire 2 employees after only a few short months. I was proud of her, and she was proud of herself. Looking back, it seemed silly that she had ever worried about failing. Tessa's one of those annoying people who touch a pile of shit and it turns to gold. That's pretty much what happened with me. She worked and worked, and she was overworking herself again after we had Auden. I nudge her. You need a night off. You're practically falling asleep on the floor while staring at the ceiling fan. A playful elbow is pressed into my hip.
I'm fine. You're the one who barely sleeps at night,
she whispers into my neck. I know she's right, but I have deadlines and no time to award myself with sleep. Besides, when I'm stuck on a passage I'm writing, it stays glued to me and I can't sleep. Still, I hate the idea of her noticing my lack of sleep, since she'll always worry about me much more than I will myself. I mean it. You need to take a break. You're still recovering from that little monster tearing you open, I say, and slide my hand up her shirt and rub her stomach. She flinches.
Don't,
she groans, trying to push my hands off her soft skin. I hate how insecure she's become since having our son. Auden's birth did more damage to her body than Emery's, but to me she's sexier than ever. I hate that the touch of my hand makes her uncomfortable like this. Baby, I move my hand away, but only so I can lean up on my elbow. Looking down at her, I shake my head. Pressing 2 warm fingers to my lips, she smiles.
I know this part of the novel. This is where you give me the heroic husbandly speech about how I earned my scars, and I'm much more beautiful for having done so,
Tessa says, giving the words at the end a dramatic flair. She's always been such a smartass. No, Tess, this is where I show you how I feel when I look at you. I move my hand to her breast and squeeze just hard enough to ignite her, letting her body warm up to me. I catch her moan before she does, and she whimpers when I find her hard nipple and pinch it beneath her clothing. She's done for. I know it. She knows it. She accepts it openly, and I react as fast as I can. My hands quickly find the leg of her shorts and slide under the fabric there. Sure enough, there's a damp spot at the front of her panties. I love the feel of her wetness and crave the taste of it on my tongue. I take my fingers away and lift them to my lips. Tessa moans and pulls my index and middle fingers to her mouth and sucks their tips. God damn, this woman ruins me. Her eyes are glued to mine as her teeth nip my fingertips. I push my body against hers, letting her feel how hard my cock is from her little tease fest. I pull at the waistband of her cotton shorts and push them down her thighs and to her feet. She kicks them furiously when her panties get stuck there. She wants it now, needs me now. I suck at the skin on her neck and feel her hand grip my cock. She's as frantic as I am as she undresses me. By the time she climbs on top of me, she has me down to my socks. Tessa's insecurities seem to disappear as she lowers her body down on mine and brings her wet lips to my hard skin. Her warm tongue swipes across the tip, earning her a drop of me on her tongue. She keeps her mouth moving at a steady pace, taking more and more of me as I moan her name. I lay my head back against the floor and reach up to grip her chest. Her tits are still inflated from the breastfeeding, one body change she loves, and I'm sure as hell not complaining about having even more of her to play with. Fuck, I love your tits, I say, as she slides her mouth down my length. Tessa's mouth draws harder on me, hugging me as I feel the tension building up my back. Just as I weave my hands through her hair, she pulls back, licking her lips while her eyes stay on mine. She lifts herself up on her elbows and brings her chest to my groin. I pant like a dog, waiting for his owner to pet him after a day alone in a cage. Tessa pushes her beautiful tits together and slides my cock between them. With three of her movements, I come on her skin. As I catch my breath, Tessa's tongue darts out between her lips, and she gives me a shy smile, her cheeks flushed from the way her body responds to pleasing me. She lifts herself to her feet, then, looking down at her chest, says,
"I'm going to need a shower."
Still panting, I grab my black t-shirt from the floor and lift it to her chest. She pushes her hand out, making a face at me, and moves toward the door. Over the years, she has become less and less fond of me cleaning up any bodily fluids with my t-shirts. It's apparently inappropriate, and that's what towels are for, she warns me each time. I follow her into the bathroom, ticking off in my mind all the ways I'm going to repay her in the shower. Her chest looks amazing pushed up against the glass. The mirror on the wall there has to be one of the best things in this apartment. Hesse, Easter.
Harden, Auden is up.
Tessa's voice breaks through my cloud of sleep.
We need to wake Emery up and let them find their Easter baskets.
She shakes my shoulder, begging me to wake up.
Harden, come on.
Her voice is low, but excitement rings through her barely contained whispers. If this is how I'm woken up for the rest of my life, I'll be a lucky bastard. I groan, barely opening my eyes as I pull her to my chest.
What's the ruckus?
I ask, pressing my lips against her temple. Her hair sticks to my face, and I brush the strands away. She's topless, her soft breasts pressed against my side. She sighs, wrapping a stubbly leg through mine. I flinch away in jest, and she playfully nudges me.
The kids need to find their baskets, and I want to start breakfast, so you need to get up.
And like that, like she's not totally turning me on, she wiggles her body free of mine and rolls over to climb out of bed.
Come on, baby,
I complain, missing the warmness of her body. As she opens the dresser, I glance over at her naked chest. A whine leaves my throat, and I wish I'd woken up earlier to keep her in the bed with me. I would be inside of her right now, buried deep inside her warm, wet. A pillow smacks me in the face.
Get out of bed! We have a busy day today, you know.
Sighing, I roll out of our king-size bed and toss a shirt over my head before she throws something else my way. She spent months redecorating the place only a little bit ago. I'm sure she doesn't want to damage any of the precious decorations she picked out with the insane decorator she convinced me we needed. The guy was a loon, painting the living room a salmon color, then repainting it a week later with a slightly less nauseating shade.
I know, darling. Baskets, bunnies, eggs, and shit.
I catch my reflection in the mirror hanging on the wall and run my fingers over my hair. Using the band on my wrist, I pull my hair up and look over at a glaring Tessa. The corners of her mouth are attempting to stay straight, but I can see the struggle.
Yes, and shit.
She laughs finally and reaches for her hairbrush.
We have to be at Landon's at 2. Karen and Ken have flown in, and I haven't even made the potato salad we're supposed to bring.
After finishing with her long hair, she goes to hand me the brush with a smirk. I shake my head. I don't need to brush it. My fingers do the trick. I'll make the potatoes while you get ready, I offer. Now let's go watch the kids find their baskets. She makes a face, judging my ability to make the potatoes for her an iffy proposition at best. I'm fully capable of this, except maybe last Christmas, when I burned the chicken. Tessa is dressed in white cotton pants and a navy blue t-shirt. Her skin has a hint of a tan from spending time out on the patio, tending to her small garden. She loves our small yard here in Brooklyn. It's her favorite part of the new townhouse I bought her to celebrate my newest book deal. In the hallway, she stops by Emery's room.
Wake her up and meet me in the living room.
She kisses my cheek and yells for our son. I slap her ass as she walks away, and she rolls her eyes at me. The usual. When I go into Emery's room, she's lying sprawled out on the bed, her long legs hanging over the edge of her small Disney-themed bedspread. Em, I gently shake her arm. She stirs but keeps her eyes shut. When I do it again, she whines,
No,
and turns onto her stomach and buries her face in the pillow. Dramatic little one, she is. Baby, you have to get up. Auden is going to take all your Easter candy if you don't. And just like that, she's hopping out of bed, her blonde hair a wild mess. Her hair is wavy like mine, and thick like her mum's.
He better not,
she declares, as she pushes her feet into her slippers and bolts from the room. When I catch up, she's pulling open every cabinet in the kitchen.
Where is mine?
She shrieks. Tessa laughs, and Auden messily unwraps a chocolate egg with his chubby little fingers before shoving the entire thing into his mouth. He chews for a moment, then opens his mouth wide. Tessa leans over to him and pulls a piece of aluminium wrapping from his tongue, and he smiles, chocolate covering his crooked teeth. He lost his front tooth last week, and it's absolutely fucking adorable. I give him shit about his lisp, because that's a perk of being a parent. I get to tease them when I please. It's a rite of passage.
Mom!
Emery complains from the hallway closet.
Dad hit mine, didn't he? That's why I can't find it.
I laugh at her dramatics. Yes, yes, I did. She's a sweet girl, just full of sass and opinions at the young age of 11. It's why she doesn't have many friends. Emery continues rummaging through the townhouse as Auden devours half his basket of candy, tossing little strings of fake grass onto the floor. There's a drum in there, too, I tell him. He nods, mouth still full of candy, not seeming to be too interested in anything that isn't made of chocolate.
Daddy!
Emery walks into the kitchen with empty hands.
Can you please tell me where you hit my basket? This is too hard. Harder than last year.
She stands next to where I sit on the bar stool and wraps her arms around my waist. She's so tall for her age, and she's trying to play me for a fool.
Please,
she begs. You aren't fooling me, my dear. I'll give you a hint, but a hug and a sweet voice won't work to bribe me. You have to work for things, remember? She purses her lips and hugs me tighter.
I know, Daddy,
she says into my chest. I smirk at this new tactic and look over to find Tessa watching Emery with suspicious eyes. It's somewhere you never, ever go. It's where your clothes are that you refuse to help us fold. I rub my hand over her back, and she unlatches her arms from my neck.
The washer machine!
Auden shouts, and Emery squeals. She rushes over to her brother and touches the top of his head. He smiles, looking awfully like a little puppy as he gets praised by his big sister. Within a minute, Emery is running into the kitchen with her basket. Tiny chocolate Easter eggs fall onto the floor. Ignoring them, she continues to dig at the full basket. Tessa stands up to help her clean up the mess. Emery herself doesn't seem interested in cleaning at all. Emery sits down on the floor. Her basket rests on her crossed legs, and she's scarfing down a handful of colorful jelly beans. I turn toward Tessa and Auden. He's in her arms with his arms wrapped around her neck. In her arms, he looks almost as big as his mum. I have no fucking idea where the time has gone or how I, a fucked up rebellious little shit, produced such emphatic and calm children. I mean, Emery has had her share of tantrums, sure. Like when she threw a plant into a wall. But that wasn't hard to deal with. I took her door off the hinges. I don't fucking play that spoiled child anger bullshit. She doesn't have anything to be angry about at 11, not the way I did. She has two parents who love her and are always here. Really, they are both great kids. Tessa and I are always here for both of our kids. They've never gone without a hug, kiss, and at least two mushy I love yous before the end of each day. Emery gets some of the trendy stuff that circulates as social currency among the popular kids at school. I never want my kids to be like I was, the kid with the holes in his shoes. I want them to know how it feels to want things like toys, and then teach them a way to earn them, by doing simple things like hugs and kisses on the cheek and encouragement, which are never going to be scarce around here. We decided that the moment they were born. I wasn't going to be like my father, either one of them. I was going to raise children who knew they were loved, never having to guess or assume that they were alone in the world. The world is too big to be alone in, especially for two little Scots. I stopped the pattern of piss-poor dads right in its track before I could ruin two little lives. Within an hour, Emery is passed out, one leg sticking straight up on the back of the couch and one arm dangling over the side. Auden is on his favourite couch that, while supposedly miniature, takes up too much space, but that Tessa brought home over my protestations anyway. The couch came complete with a nice overpriced ottoman, which also takes up too much space for a Brooklyn living room. I was overruled in the furniture discussion, so here I am staring at my six-year-old, who sprawled out in a candy coma with traces of chocolate still smeared on his square little chin. He's got more of me than his mum in him.
"Look how sweet they are," Tessa says from behind me.
When I face her, she looks exhausted. Her eyes are cloudy and her skin is slightly pale. I touch my lips to her cheeks, hoping to kiss some of the colour back into them. She sighs, and I feel her hands rest on my stomach. "What do you plan on doing during this nap time?" I ask her. She always manages to use every valuable minute of the kids' nap time, which has been getting shorter and shorter, for productive things. She's too busy, that woman. But she doesn't listen to shit I say, so there's nothing to be done here. I watch as she mentally checks items off her list.
"Well,"
she says slowly, then begins spouting off things like,
"Call Fee about the cake,"
and
"get Posy to double-check those bouquets,"
and something else I don't hear when I bring my hand to the front of her loose pants. She eyes me carefully as I tug at the drawstring and dip my fingers into her panties.
"Don't distract me,"
she complains, but pushes her body toward me, making me apply more pressure.
"You're working too much,"
I tell her for the 30th time this week. She rolls her eyes for the 31st. She grabs my free wrist and lifts my hand to her chest.
"Says the man who doesn't sleep for days when he has a deadline."
She's open to being distracted by me today. A little different than usual, but I'll sure as hell take it. I palm her roughly and watches her tits push up to her neck and back down. She whines, whimpering for more of me. I'll give it to her. Grabbing her hand, I lead her down the hallway. She walks quickly, anxious to get to our room. The moment we step through the doorway, Tessa slams the heavy thing, nearly knocking loose a giant framed painting of the kids from the wall. When she'd first proposed getting it done, I found it creepy. But Tessa loved the idea of having an image of them the size of a damn billboard in here. The only part of this I had a say in was that it be placed on the opposite side of the room from our bed. No way am I staring at an abstract, neon-painted version of my children while fucking my wife. No fucking way. "Come here," I tell her, beckoning her to my lap. I'm sitting on the edge of our king-size bed. We shared a bed with both of our children sporadically over the last few months. Auden went through a nightmare phase, one where I kept myself awake at night, wondering if this was something he had inherited from me. Emery followed suit, being jealous of her younger brother, and came asking in whispers for protection from her bad dreams, which I knew wasn't true. She was wiping her eyes like she was six again and everything. Both of them lay between us. It was awesome, let me tell you.
Harden.
Tessa's voice is soft, raspy, and her eyes are on mine.
What are you thinking about?
She asks. Her fingers trail up and down my stomach, her nails gently scratching at my skin. The kids, and when they used to sleep in our bed. I shrug, smiling at her.
That's awkward,
she says with a shake of her head, but a smile peeps through her lip. It's only awkward because it's me who's distracting instead of you this time, my darling. I tease her hardened nipples and she moans. I lift her shirt over her head. It drops to the floor and she shakes her hair back, making her look wild, red cheeks and pink lips. Wild blonde hair and hungry eyes. I reach out, tracing my finger over the lining of her black lace bra. This woman wears the sexiest lace bras. I dip under the material and tug at her nipples. Lie down, baby, I instruct. She drops her pants and panties, kicking them to the floor, and lies back on the bed. She reaches for a pillow and tucks it under her head. Her eyes tell me exactly what she wants. She wants me to go down on her. It's her favorite lately. She's tired, worn down, and her feet hurt, so she simply wants to be pampered. This will be reciprocated, of course. My woman returns the favor, taking my cock down her throat on mornings when the kids let us sleep past 7 a.m. Tessa lifts her legs up, bends them, and opens her thighs wide directly in front of me. I bite down on my lip, trying to squash a groan before it falls from my lips. She's soaking, glistening under the light, and I have no self-control when it comes to her. I nearly lunge forward, pressing my open mouth against her soft, wet skin. My tongue moves in a single harsh line down her, sucking gently as I go. Her hips shift, pushing her body against me. I hook my arms around her thighs and roughly pull her to the edge of the bed. She yelps, an adorable little sound of surprise mixed with her excitement. My hands are gripping her ass and my mouth is devouring her as she moans my name, mixed in with yes and oh my, and a thousand other dirty things. I love her little exclamations of encouragement. They cause me to make her legs shake, to make her hands clutch the sheets. Now she's gripping my hair, an entire handful. I fucking love it.
Heart done.
Her voice breaks, and I bring a finger to her pussy, sliding it in, driving her mad. I circle her clit with my tongue, humming and circling, humming and circling. I taste her as she comes, the sweetest flavor. I come up for air and lift myself up to lay my head on her stomach as she catches her breath. She tugs at my hair, dragging me up her body. I'm still hard, and lying on top of her naked leaves little room for anything except sex in my list of wants and needs. Tessa knows this, which is why she's lifting up off the bed again, rubbing herself against me. You want me to fuck you? You haven't had enough? I ask her, pressing my hardness against her wetness.
I'll never have enough,
she whines, and I whimper as she wraps her hand around my cock and guides it inside her. I make one long drag inside her and watch in awe as her eyes roll back in her head. Her tits are pressed up against my chest, her thighs wrapped around my waist.
More,
she begs, wanting me to move inside of her. I oblige, thrusting quickly. One of her hands is in my hair, and the other is digging into the skin of my back. I won't last long, at all. I feel her legs tightening around me, and I reach my high at the same time, riding out my last few pumps as her body turns to gel with mine. She keeps her eyes closed, and I collapse next to her. As my breathing slows, I glance over at Tessa. Her blue-gray eyes are closed, her lips are parted, and she's just as beautiful as she was the day I met her. I can barely remember the kid I was when I met her, but every detail of our lives together since runs through me like a song. This stubborn woman still refuses to legally marry me, but she's my wife in every way that matters, and she's the mother of my beautiful children. We want to have at least one more when her work slows down. I'm anxious about bringing another child into the world. I get a little worried each time. The responsibility to raise decent human beings weighs heavily on me, but Tessa carries half of the weight and reassures me that we are great parents. I'm not like my father was. I'm my own man. Certainly, I've made my share of mistakes, but I served my penance and came out forgiven. I'm not a particularly religious man, but I know there has to be something bigger than Tess and me at play here. My world went from nothing to everything, and I feel pride in who I am now. I see my own light in my children's eyes, and I hear my happiness in their laughter. I'm proud of the difference I make in local teenagers' lives with my fundraisers for the community center. I've met thousands of people whose lives were affected by my words on pages. I fought for so long to keep everything in, but once I let go, my heart opened up. It would have been selfish for me not to share my experiences, not to help teens who suffer from addiction and mental health disorders. Through the years, I learned not to focus on the past, but only look toward the future. I'm aware of how cliche and just flat-out fucking sappy my thoughts sound, but it's my truth. I lived in darkness for so long. I want to help bring light to others. I'm blessed with a family that I couldn't have dreamed of, and I'm raising kids who will be better than I ever was. Tessa's head falls to the side, and I brush her hair away from her sleeping face. She's been my calm, my fire, my breath, my pain, and no matter what we've gone through, every second was worth getting to the life we have now. I dragged Tess and myself through hell and back, but here we are. After everything, we made it to our own version of heaven.
Before was written by Anna Todd and read by Shane East, Jason Carpenter, and Grace Grant. Editing and post-production by Common Mode. Paul Fowley, technical director. The associate producer was Louisa Solomon. The mix engineer was Mike DeCino. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Before is available in print from Gallery Books. Also by Anna Todd from Simon & Schuster Audio, After Ever Happy, read by Shane East and Elizabeth Louise.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.